So I have your attention now. You know, last week we, I guess I better stand close to this morning. Last week we spent our time taking a look at that first commandment, you will have no other gods before me. And I tried to emphasize the way that these commandments, this first one and actually the other nine that follow, as a gift to us as God's people in order that we might know how to continue to live in freedom. And of course, freedom means freedom to love God and freedom to love one another and freedom to even love our truest and our best selves. And so we looked at it from the positive side, and I tried to state maybe some dimensions of that first commandment in a more positive way. And we talked about how we might say it like this. Your heart will belong to God. Your character will be shaped by God. And your life will be ordered rightly by God. And so then, the very next word in this passage in Exodus is about staying clear of the specific threats to a life of freedom with God. It is about our hearts not belonging to someone or something else, about our character not being shaped by someone or something else, and about our lives not being ordered by someone or something else. Because when that happens, that's the essence of what the scriptures are talking about when they use that word idol, idolatry. It's about choosing another arrangement for living. The problem is that when this is happening, we don't see it. Matter of fact, we choose many times not to see it. We have this thing that we could call denial, that we don't want to recognize and admit that another arrangement is running the show for us. What we need is an idol detection service. I was watching WIPB, the Muncie Public Television Station. There was a commercial that came on that was, I thought, strange, odd. I saw an ad for a business called A Rental Service. That's the name of it, A Rental Service. Couldn't they think of something more creative than just a rental service? Well, then it dawned on me. They chose A as the first word for a particular reason. You remember the Yellow Pages? You name your business with an A and you're on there first. That's my guess. That's what that's about. And it worked. I remembered it. So in keeping with that, I'm naming my message the AAA Idol Detection Service. That way maybe you'll think of it first and just maybe remember it. So what are the three A's? What do they stand for? In this case, they do stand for something. I'm talking about three conditions that very often will point to the presence of an idol in our lives if we allow them to serve that purpose. First, anger. Why would anger be a sign that an idol is present? Well, think for a minute about what anger actually is. By the way, I had a class in seminary that was just called anger. A class where we studied nothing about human anger and how it works and what it means. Anger in human beings is always the response to a perceived threat. It's built into our biological mechanism. It's that thing we often call the fight or flight syndrome. That if a threat is perceived, we are designed to either stay and fight for our lives or to run like heck. Can I say heck in church? I did. It's funny what you can do when you're the guy in front of the microphone. In other words, when we perceive that we're being threatened somehow, we either run or we fight. And anger is that fight response. Now, it's been very wisely said that we can learn an awful lot about a person, ourselves, by looking at what makes that person angry. In other words, by what is this person threatened? What do they feel compelled to defend? Just how angry do they become when some particular thing or behavior or person is threatened? The more important, the more central that someone or something is to the person, the greater the anger that is felt and often expressed when that is being endangered. You see, idols, here's the point, idols need a lot of defending. They're weak, basically. You know why? Because they don't make worthy centers for a person's life. It's sort of like an oppressive tyrant ruling in a country always has to surround himself with a powerful army and a strong police force. Why? Because he doesn't have the right to be ruling those people. It's sort of like that. Something is illegitimately ruling in the center of a person's life requires lots of defending. And so the person becomes angry whenever that despot, I'll say, is threatened. And so when the angry response seems inappropriate or inappropriately strong to something in particular, when a person's anger comes out, wow, I didn't expect that. That's a pretty good sign that there might be an idol involved in this person's life somehow. You getting uncomfortable yet? Let me give you a few examples to make you really uncomfortable. How angry do you get when someone suggests or implies that you might be spending too much time on your cell phone? How angry do you get when a family member suggests that maybe you're playing too much golf? Do you get mad at someone who may track a little bit of dirt into the house? Here's the big one. How about money and how it gets spent? Probably the biggest source of anger and conflict in marriages and families. And you know what? We all know that church people ain't immune to it. When there's a decision that's going to be made about, if there's some money and a decision about how to spend it, but I'm talking from experience here. I've been doing this for 26 years. When there's some money to be spent and there's disagreement about it, boy, people get angry. Just saying. Now, are you getting mad at your pastor for suggesting any of these things? Pay attention to your anger, especially when it's quick and disproportionate, because it might be detecting something that has taken over the center. Anger's not all bad. It serves a very good and worthy purpose. There are lots of good reasons that we're built this way as well. There's appropriate anger. Jesus got angry. So maybe a good guide for understanding what the anger's about is this. If God is the center of our lives, then we become protective about what God treasures. What does God treasure? Look to your right, your left, in front of you, behind you. That's what God treasures, these other people that we're sharing this room with, and all the other people out there in the larger world, especially the ones that are being taken advantage of, the ones that are needy, the ones that are rejected, the ones that are sick, the ones that are afflicted, the ones that are suffering, the ones that are doing without the stuff that we take for granted. That's what Jesus got angry about, is when those people were not being treated well. The powerless, the sick, and the broken. When we become protective about things like justice and peace, about taking good care of this beautiful world, we get angry about those things. That's probably a clue that we might be having God in the center, because those are the things that God defends. Otherwise, our anger might just be detecting an idol. That's the first A. The second A, which follows or is often present along with anger, is addiction. As I said, these are commandments about living in freedom as the children of God. To put it very simply, then, a central part of our human nature given by God is what we call desire. This might be one of the things that distinguishes Christianity from maybe Eastern religions. We realize that desire is a God-given thing. It has a proper direction. We are made to love God, to be loved by God, to love one another. That's how Christians understand the proper channeling of desire. Or as St. Augustine said many centuries ago, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you." So there's a proper object of our desire. But the problem is we misuse our freedom. We channel this inborn desire towards all kinds of other things, other behaviors, even people. You know, you can be addicted to a person. It's not pretty. It's called codependency. Sometimes we become so deeply habituated to these things that we're trapped. We lose our freedom. We're in bondage to those things. And that is the nature of an idol, for one to become a slave to it. If the first commandment says your hearts will belong to God, then this next one says don't give your hearts to any inferior substitute. If you do, you're not going to stay free for long. Addiction is about how our God-given desire becomes attached elsewhere. The late psychiatrist Gerald May, who was the leader of the really well-regarded Shalem Institute for Spiritual Formation, wrote what I think is the book on addiction for Christians. It's called Addiction and Grace. It's about 25 years old now, I think. But in that book, he makes this bold statement. Listen to this. All of us suffer from addiction. I mean, in all truth, that the psychological, neurological, and spiritual dynamics of full-fledged addiction are actively at work within every human being. The same processes that are responsible for addiction to alcohol and narcotics are also responsible for addiction to ideas, work, relationships, power, moods, fantasies, and an endless variety of other things. And then this, addiction also makes idolaters of us all, because it forces us to worship these objects of attachment, thereby preventing us from truly, freely loving God and one another. That sort of sums it up. So if we find ourselves unable to detach from any substance, behavior, person, or thing, it's a pretty clear indication that an idol has taken up residence in your life. I am a person who has struggled with many addictions. I've shared with you my lifelong addiction to overeating, to food. It's an idol. I need help. I got addicted to Facebook and had to get off there because I was wasting too much of my time doing that. Just saying. Oh, by the way, I heard on the radio this week that they did a study of people who agreed to go off Facebook for a week, and they reportedly were happier. They were happier off Facebook than they were on Facebook. To do what you want with that. Anger and addiction are both pointers to the presence of idols. They are so often found together. And when anger and addiction are both present, a third idol detector is not far behind. The third A is what I call alienation. I'm talking about having our relationships strained and broken. Because idols put distance between me and the rightful objects of my love and my attachment. The rightful recipients of my love, God, other people, and even my true self. An idol. Here's a definition. An idol is anything or anyone who steals our desire for loving relationships with God and others. The list of candidates is endless. It is no accident that most idolatrous behavior is done in secret. Maybe I'm oversharing here, but I remember when I was really deep into my food addiction, I would go off to lunch to a buffet someplace where nobody knew me and go find a place in the corner, and then I'd have an hour with my best friend. It's an idol. It's an addiction, and I would get angry if anybody tried to point out to me that I was eating too much. So there you know something about me that maybe you wish you didn't. Most idolatrous behavior takes place in isolation. It separates us from other people. Because if I treasure and protect this rival God, I soon find myself becoming more and more distant from my family, my friends, and my God. Because after all, if I'm an angry and addicted person, who wants to be around me? How can I have the presence and the freedom that I need to love other people? So how's it with you and the other important people you share life with? Are you preoccupied with something or someone else? Are you putting these other people off so that you can attend to this other allegiance? How out of order are your priorities? How is loving God and loving others as you love yourself working out for you in daily life? Hard questions, aren't they? Our feelings of disconnection might be trying to tell us something. So for purposes of illustration, I've talked about these three A's. Anger, addiction, alienation, as though they were three separate things, but they're not really. They're just facets of the same picture. They always, nearly always go together. Anger, addiction, alienation. When one is present, the other two often show up. Here's the question, though, because there's the good news here as well. If idolatry means that we have put someone or something else in the center of life where only God rightly belongs, then how do we regain a life of freedom and love? The good news is that the one and only rightful ruler invites us back into the life of freedom from slavery. Jesus announces and makes available to every one of us what he called the kingdom of God. Our part is to surrender our hearts and our lives to the one who loves us. That's a painful process itself. Sometimes it takes great commitment, much energy, and hard work. But that's the point of Christian discipleship, finally, isn't it? It begins with honesty and recognizing and admitting the truth about ourselves and our lives. It continues in a turning toward the grace of God, that is, God, grace of God, God doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves, sets us free, involves a reconnection. That's what we're doing here together. It involves a reconnection with God and with other people in a loving fellowship in which we live and learn the ways of Jesus, which give us the freedom of the children of God. It's the life of freedom. My yoke is easy, my burden is light, and you will find rest for your souls. It's the process, then, by which we make a commitment and do the work on an ongoing basis to make sure that our hearts belong to God, to make sure that our character is being shaped by God, and to do everything we can then to allow our lives to be rightly ordered by God. That's not just another sermon. That's a lifetime of commitment and learning with other people. You can't do this by yourself. It's all about grace. It's all about God doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. That's the good news. Freedom. Amen.